Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Our next guest is comes from one of our favorite shows here on Channel Q. We're huge fans of Netflix's Tales of the City. And, of course, we're being joined by one of the stars who is best known for their breakout role as Jake Rodriguez. Welcome to the show, trans non-binary actor and activist, Garcia. Hi, Garcia.
Hi, how are you? Wow, great. That was a great intro.
You know what? Preparation is everything, honey.
And just love being it. Fans. It. And it helps that when people actually watch the show and they're fans of what you're up to.
I've actually watched it twice. I am so obsessed with this show. But if people aren't familiar, let's start off with this. Tell us kind of what Tales of the City is all about.
Tales of the City is about the queer scene in San Francisco. It was originally a series of novels in the 1970s, and it went up on television in the early 1990s. And now Netflix went ahead and put on a whole brand new reboot, and it kind of follows along. It continues the story of Anna Magical and Marianne Singleton and their relationship, but now it has new residents at 28 Barbary Lane, a more modern version, a lot more diversity when it comes to queerness on the spectrum, but also race and ethnicity. So all around, just a whole new beautiful view on what the queer community truly looks like.
As an actor, what was it like to audition for this role? I mean, when you got the script, was it something I'm sure you identified with and you were super excited to possibly be part of?
Yeah, no, it was amazing. I still can't wrap my mind around it. Auditioning was weird, right? I thought the short description that they sent along with the sides was felt very spot on and related to it off the bat, and just was so overwhelmed by that someone would want to write about this, but not only write about it, but put it on a mainstream. In mainstream media, and what does that look like, you know, for Netflix to be worldwide and for you know, trans people, non-binary people to then be portrayed on screen worldwide. So extremely overwhelming, but in the best ways.
Yeah, because we've actually had Laura Morelli on the show not too long ago, actually. And one thing about her is the energy and how much passion that she had for this project. What was it kind of like working with her?
Oh my God, she's... one of my favorite people ever, one of the best bosses I've ever had, truly. So loving, so welcoming, so just everything, reassuring, kind, gave undivided attention when needed. And there was a few times I derailed just because of my own, you know, insecurities and not knowing if I was doing the right thing. Is this correct? Why am I here? And then this was always just there to ground me, pull me back and reassuring me that, you know, that I deserve to be there, that people like me deserve to be in those spaces. And just creating an all-around welcoming environment. So the love that I think that Netflix portrays, or not Netflix, but Tales of the City portrays, and the idea of family, of home, very much was that on set, which was amazing.
Yeah,
experience.
And we have even our program director watch the old Tales of City.
Yeah,
and
read the books, owns all the books.
And I think it was one of those moments where it probably was scary to take on such a legacy franchise and story, but then bring it to a new audience. But it seems like all audiences have resonated with it, from the new audiences to the ones that were fans of the show before.
Definitely, definitely. They had at the San Francisco World Premiere, at the San Francisco screening of the first episode of Tales that we did, there was an after party, and I got to talking to a lot of people that went, and I actually met some couples that had moved there because of Armistead's novels.
Wow. Oh, wow.
Which was just, some of them from Utah, South Dakota, just, all over. And I had asked them, are you from San Francisco? No, we moved here because of the book, because of the series. And you know, that idea that like there's family out there, you just got to go out there and find them. Yeah, so I mean, it's been wonderful to meet, you know, the fans all across the board of different generations.
Yeah. Which I think one thing that really stood out to me, especially about your character's storyline, was one, it just pointed out that, you know, LGBTQ people don't kind of have one way of just coming out. And especially when it came to online dating, I was wondering, I guess, how was your experience as a non-binary trans person kind of navigating that world?
The dating world or coming out?
Yeah, like the dating world. I mean, honestly, the dating world, because it was very interesting how your character Jake went through that and was one kind of coming out as, you know, a trans man that was gay, but then also, you know, figuring out if he was going to be accepted on these apps and all that. And I was kind of wondering your own experience when kind of dating and figuring that out, just acceptance.
Yeah, that's a great question, actually. It was difficult. It was so terrifying and like weird and just like the hardest, I think one of the hardest things I've had to navigate when it comes to like my identity and my sexuality and figuring how my body fits into a world that it was, you know, wasn't created for it. Right. And so, I remember I had started transitioning, towards the end of one of my last relationships. And so being single, but also like then still being in the beginning of my transition was extremely difficult because I didn't know what to do. I was like, well, how will women perceive me, you know, or, you know, people who identify as lesbians, like how are they going to perceive me? Can I date them? Or, you know, how does that work? Like, being interested in men and then, you know, being interested in me, but also like, when do you tell someone?
Yeah.
Do you have to?
Yeah.
And I remember being on Tinder, which is not a like trans non-binary friendly app at all. And being scared, but also like, okay, well, let's just try it. And it kind of went down the same exact way we saw between Jake and Flacco, where I like was messaging this guy on Tinder. We're going back and forth. Decided to meet up, and I hadn't told him because I was like, "Well, when do you say that? Does it matter? Like, is it just a date?" And it got a little far, and I did. It was that exact scene where it's just like you have to tell someone in that moment.
Yeah, because, like,
it matters, and it's so scary because you have no idea how this person across from you is going to react. They can get angry. I mean, people end up being murdered, you know, because of quote unquote being lied to or tricked, or, you know, so it's it was hard. It was hard for a very long time. And it, I don't know if there's any answers, right? Cause even turning to my other trans and non-binary friends is like, how do you navigate this? And it's definitely person to person.
It's just depends on experience,
you know, how you choose on your own to open. And there's no guidebook. You're like, I think with all queer identities, you're constantly just trying to figure out what works for you and what doesn't. It was tough.
We're talking to Garcia, who plays Jake on Tales of the City on Netflix right now. And I guess as an ally, what can we do to make sure that you feel safe and heard in these spaces as well?
Honestly, you know, something that I noticed recently for me is that just like simple steps that like, or simple signs that show that a space is inclusive to everyone, at staff meetings, you know, or like at first time when people are getting together in groups, and the idea of that, like introducing yourself and not just saying your name, but saying you're asking for pronouns.
Yeah.
And even that is the opportunity for someone to be like, my pronouns are she, her, he, him, they, them, or she, her, they, them, or, you know, however they want. And just automatically, like, as me, as a non-binary person in that space, to hear someone else say that their pronouns are they, them, it automatically makes me feel so much safer and so much like, okay, if there's someone else in the room that I can, like, cling to, we can be together, as opposed to, like, feeling or thinking that we're the only ones there and that we have to, like, navigate all these binary people, all these cisgendered people, and it's like, how do you do that? So I think asking for pronouns off the bat immediately, how does someone want to be referred to, is so important. And I think it's important to be respected because then you're validating that person's time of changing, and you're also telling them that they're safe, they're welcome, that it's okay to be them in their entirety.
Yeah, that's powerful.
And that we will respect that. And then go from there, right? Like if there's questions that people have. I mean, not everyone is comfortable asking personal or answering personal questions or even asking. But, you know, if it gets to that point, like, I think, you know, being interested as opposed to being ignorant for me has always been, you know, preferred. But definitely that first step, I think, is pronouns and how someone wants to be referred to and spoken to is highly important.
Yeah.
Thank you. That's great.
Yeah,
thank you.
I think that's such a great way of bringing that into conversation. And kind of switching gears, the interesting thing about, I found out that you grew up in Chicago. You're a Chicago native. I have families all over Illinois, and I know kind of that experience when it comes to growing up in Chicago. I wanted to know kind of about your journey and how it was, even on your like self-identity. Was that kind of difficult, especially being in a what's known to be a very hardcore, tough city like Chicago?
I don't know what's hardcore about it. I mean, I did grow up in Southwest Side. Shout out to the South Side if they're listening. But
they are. We're on B96 out there.
Yeah,
honey.
That's why we brought it up too.
That's
There we go. but I don't know. I don't know if I found it hard. I mean, I grew up as a tomboy, and I was always in the streets with the boys, and that was. I mean, after, you know, you duke it out with them because it's even when you're younger. But once they hit puberty, it's kind of like, all right, then we can't, you know, we can't match up anymore. But, I mean, I never experienced any sort of flat-out discrimination or flat-out disrespect. It was always more so me being confused for looking like a boy, which was really interesting when I was younger because I wasn't trying to be. It was just because of the clothes I felt comfortable in and how I chose to represent myself. Which later looking back is not like, oh, I was gender fluid and what I chose to wear was just like, you know, fluid. I later grew up and found a not-for-profit theater that I ended up at and ended up feeling it was like a whole introduction into what it means to be politically correct. What does it mean to be self-aware? What does it mean to use art and theater as a form of fighting for radical justice, right?
Yeah.
And so that being a whole new introduction to like a whole new world of like, oh, this place will accept me. This art circle, this theater circle, this ensemble. So it kind of wasn't, I mean, I don't know.
It wasn't that bad, basically.
Yeah. Well, I don't know if it was a good lie. I mean, so like you make do, right? I think
adapt to your environment.
Color, specifically queer, like queer people of color, they make do. And we find ways to survive in a world, right, that is constantly trying to put us down, constantly trying to kill us.
But yes.
We're still here. We've been here. We're always going to be, right, because we just figured it out.
And you seem pretty positive. Are you, you're a glass half full type of person?
I would hope. Yeah, I would think so. I think so. Yeah, from the environments I was raised in, always looking for the better, and just always being looking for people that, or trying to surround myself with people that you know wanted more, wanted to do more, and priding myself in having good friends that you know push themselves and also push me, and just you know trying to keep it going no matter what, you know.
And you're still youngin'. You're right now studying at NYU's Tisch School of the Arts. So are you studying while being on the show? Like, how does that work? And this is your first major role. Like, and how did that even come about?
Well, I had an agent prior. I had luckily there was an agent in Chicago that was rooting or vouching for queer actors, specifically trans non-binary actors, and. And so that's how I ended up being signed. Someone gave my name to someone else, and then so on and so forth. And so I had an agent for about a year and a half, or about a year before going to NYU. I also had an old mentor that was like, you need to go back to school. I had been out for 4 years. And so I was like, all right, I'll go. You know, I didn't think I would get in. I didn't think I was good enough. I didn't think I could do it. It was not something... I was actually recently talking to a friend who's also from Chicago, from Humboldt Park, and we were both talking about how, like, oftentimes urban youth don't think that they can obtain good things or like kind of key success.
I relate to that. It's that imposter syndrome. Right, yeah.
Right, right. Or that we're undeserving, that we can't, like, dreaming of going to university, like a 4-year university is like out of the question because like no one around you, you know, goes or can do that. And so, but like you do it and you're like, oh, I can't do this. Oh, I am deserving. Like, you know, and so, going to, then getting into NYU and then being there for a year, and towards the end of my second semester, my first year is when the audition for Tales hit. And it kind of just, I don't know, things were just falling into place. And, I mean, I guess kind of, yeah. I mean, I'm even here now, you know, I'm still trying to figure it out, right? I don't consider myself a full-time actor. I walk dogs, you know, to keep afloat.
There you go.
That is like the cutest.
It's real.
I love a person that walks dogs. I have a dog.
No, oh, I love dogs.
Good. That's good to know.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's not always glitter and rainbows, right? Like, it's still hard out here trying to hustle, trying to keep a job and trying to go to school and somehow trying to afford all that, right, when it comes to loans and debt and
all
those adult things.
So. Netflix isn't saving everyone here.
I'm sorry?
I was saying Netflix. Netflix can't just save everything. But you know, we all have life that happened before.
I'm so happy that you touched on that imposter syndrome, because that is something that a lot of people, especially LGBTQ, you know, people of color, dabble with. And I think that's why representation is so big, especially like a show like this brings that forward. And to kind of wrap this up, how was it kind of working on such a set with, you know, everyone that was from every different side of, you know, the rainbow and every walks of life?
It was amazing. I never would have thought that my first mainstream project would be so inclusive.
Yeah.
So loving, so welcoming. I mean, everyone behind the camera, in front of the camera, hair, makeup, PAs, like everyone was so kind, so like ready to work, ready to be there. I never walked on set and I didn't know if someone was having a bad day, you know, like you couldn't tell because everyone was so there for it. And so then when you throw in all these queer folks that are also there, all these queer folks of color, you're just like, wow, okay, like we're really here, we're really doing this, like, and this is, it's happening, and we're getting paid for it, you know, like somebody funded this and was like, yeah, y'all can do this. And it's great. It just gives a lot of reassurance to not just like who I am as a person, but also like the work that I envision, right? The work that I want to make, the work that I want to see put out there, and that like it can be done and it has been done. And it'll only continue to like help push that forward.
Yeah.
I was going to say, just like knowing media in the past has not been so inclusive and diverse. Does this give you hope for the future projects like these?
Yeah, definitely. Of course. Like when you see things like RuPaul Drag Race and Pose and Tales on television, you're like, cool. Like this is all right, because it's normal and it starts to become normalized, right? As opposed to tokenized, right? We will no longer be able to count how many queer, trans, non-binary, inclusive shows we'll have on television. It'll be countless, right? That's the world that I'm imagining. That's the world I'm looking forward to. We no longer have to argue whether or not a cis person can play a trans actor, because it won't matter, because trans folks would be well into the industry. And those are all things I'm envisioning and thinking about it at, like, hopefully maybe 10, 15, 20 years from now, it won't be so absurd. It'll actually just be a norm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, Garcia, thank you so, so much for chatting with us about the show and just everything. You are so, so inspiring. And honestly, we are fans.
Yeah, and it's just the beginning for you in so many ways. This is amazing.
Let everyone know where they can find you.
Where? What is Garcia? On Instagram and Twitter, both my handles.
Slay. Well, thank you.